always be clear where you get your conservative talk.
The St. Louis Business Journal is now reporting that liberal billionaire George Soros is the largest shareholder of Odyssey,
the parent company of KMOX and 97.1 Talk.
Soros' maneuver raises critical questions about the future of media ownership and influence.
Money and attention is power. And when he has the money and he controls what's on the radio stations, he's going to be able to control the minds, essentially hundreds of millions of Americans.
St. Louis's trusted source and number one.
For conservative talk.
This is News Talk STL.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
There's no sun up in the sky, stormy weather since my man.
And welcome into the Tim Jones and Chris Arts Show, the Tuesday edition. The late, great Lena Horne there with her classic hit, Stormy Weather. And those of you in the St. Louis metropolitan area know that we had a little stormy weather this morning. And how ironic that we start off the day with stormy weather and we end the day talking about Stormy Daniels, the adult film star's testimony today in the Donald Trump hush trial. Again, welcome to the show. In studio with me is Joey V on the wheels of steel. Joey, how are you?
Doing wonderful, my friend.
And if you are watching live on the our live stream on News Talk STL or on Rumble, you see my partner there up at the Capitol in Senator Schroer's office doing the show remotely. Tim, how are you, my friend?
Doing great. Live here from Studio Schroer. No storms in Missouri today, Chris, but there's plenty of storms underneath the Capitol Dome. Yes, there is indeed.
A lot of storms everywhere, Tim. A trial in New York. There's storms there in Jefferson City. I want to tell folks who we have guests on today, and then I want to dive into the big story today, which is probably the Stormy Daniels testimony. At 4:24, of course, we're going to have David Stokes on. He's the director of municipal policy at the Show Me Institute. We're going to talk about a judge who has okayed an extra pot tax and U City's plan to spend $27 million to do their police and court buildings. Dave and I both live in St. Louis. At Chris's Corner, we will talk about the polls. The Chris's Corner I had yesterday, but did not get to it because I went on my Kristen Welker rant at 5:07. We have, of course, the speaker stump speech. Tim, what will we be talking about today?
We're going to talk about the latest saga up here in the swamp, Chris. We have 9 legislative days to go. There are major initiatives that are teed up and ready to roll. If leadership in both chambers will dare to bring them to a vote. So I'm going to give everybody a little update on where things stand with 9 days left in the regular session. Can you believe that, Chris? It feels like yesterday you and I were up here in the Hall of Famous Missourians in the Capitol Rotunda in the first week of January. And now here we are in the first week of May.
It is
amazing.
Insane. And Tim, both you and I have birthdays in May at the end of this month. So this is a special month for the both of us. At 5:24, of course, we'll have Randy Tobler on, host of the Randy Tobler Show on News Talk STL Saturday mornings from 6 to 9. We have a lot to talk to Dr. Tobler about. One thing that I want to talk to him about, Tim, you know, COVID has almost disappeared from the landscape. You don't hear much about it. It's almost
amazing.
Been relegated to the seasonal flu. But a little personal note, my niece and nephew and their parents have contracted COVID. They live in upstate New York. The kids, it's not affecting them as much. The parents, of course, being older, it's like a flu to them. So one of the questions I'm going to have for Dr. Tobler is, what are the statistics on COVID? Is it still killing people in some numbers that would make your jaw drop? Or just where are we at with that? But a lot of show today, big show today. But Tim, this Stormy Daniels testimony, that's why I'm glad my radio partner is attorney, because we can dive into this. Donald Trump's attorney today asked for a mistrial because Stormy Daniels' testimony went way over the line and went into a lot of tawdry details that really had nothing to do with the case. The judge said that he's not going to do a mistrial, but he did kind of admonish the defense attorneys in a sense, saying that he was surprised that they didn't call more objections. Tim, remind people that Donald Trump is not on trial for having sex with Stormy Daniels, right?
And the judge reminded the prosecution of that. Chris, the prosecution here is on very thin ice. And you don't have to take my word for it. You can take leftist-leaning Judge Juan Merchum's word for it. Chris, he sustained a series of objections made by defense counsel. And what that meant was the judge is himself getting irritated and a bit aggravated as center-right-leaning attorneys and jurists and prognosticators have been predicting for several weeks. This case, Chris, is a trial in search of the facts, is what it really is. And it's definitely in search of the law. And I think the judge is getting extremely impatient. They're in week four, and the judge is basically asking, Chris, remember the old Wendy's commercial? Mm-hmm. Where's the beef? And when a liberal judge who is probably not a Trump supporter at all is starting to get aggravated with the prosecution, you know that there's trouble in the prosecutor's paradise.
Tim, here's a fact that I heard today that kind of cinched the case for me. And you as attorney, I want you to answer this. I heard that an NDA is basically a legal agreement that you sign.
That's,
you know,
correct.
That you will
that
not disclose
correct.
Any information. And a legal agreement, usually lawyers and legal professionals prepare that and do that work to draw that up, right?
That's absolutely correct. Chris,
and that costs and that costs money for you to pay a lawyer to put together a NDA agreement. Am I correct?
In New York, you're probably paying $750 to $1,000 an hour to a Manhattan-based litigator or transactional attorney if they're worth their salt.
So how come that can't go into the Trump books as a legal expense?
I think it absolutely could. And that's the problem. And you just pointed out the seminal issue with the case. Having sex with anyone, porn star or otherwise, and then having an arrangement to have a non-disclosure agreement with them and giving them money in exchange for consideration of not dishing the tea, that's called American contract law. Mm-hmm. There is nothing unlawful or illegal about it. And as much as they want to make this case about tawdry affairs of Donald, this case is starting to read like a really bad episode of like Penthouse Letters. Not that I know what those are, but it's starting to read that way, Chris. And as you said, having sex with someone and then agreeing to have an agreement to not talk about that in a consideration of exchanging money is not an illegal offense. They have to make this case about something else. And after 4 weeks, they have not.
And as I said, Tim, this was a lot of tawdry testimony from Stormy Daniels on the relationship with Donald Trump. Joey played cut three, and then I went to read some excerpts of what she said at the trial, Tim.
Just one thing that I've been sort of noticing as this has gone on is that there have been a couple times where she seems to be cracking a joke, trying to get a reaction from the jury, and our reporters in the room have noted that the jury hasn't seemed to respond.
No, they're
to
taking
that.
Their job seriously.
I mean, what do you make of that?
Humor is risky in the courtroom, especially if you go in with lines like it looks like Stormy. If something happens spontaneously, if an easel falls over, people will laugh. They're human, but it's never going to work if you go in there like, I'm going to amuse the jury. I'm going to sort of say this clever thing.
Then one of the details that Stormy detailed today, she claimed that Donald Trump told her that he and Melania do not sleep in the same bed. And she described a pre-sexual encounter with Donald Trump in a penthouse room. And she claimed that she spanked Donald Trump on the butt with a magazine and what reporters are saying that Trump visibly was angry when she said that and unaudibly, you know, mild BS. I'm not going to say the full word. Your thoughts on that?
I still don't understand what any of this has to do with a couple of misdemeanors regarding the falsification of business records under the New York State Code and how then that is turned into a felony by some mythical, thus far, ambiguous federal elections law violation over which Alvin Bragg has zero jurisdiction. Chris, there are so many grounds for appeal in this case. I don't blame the defense. In fact, I think the defense attorneys would have been arguably committing legal malpractice if they hadn't issued a mistrial. And that's what the left and the media are terrified about. The more aggravated that the judge gets, a judge who is not a fan of Donald Trump, the more aggravated he gets with the prosecutors, the closer to the line we're getting for a complete and total mistrial. I don't think that'll happen. Judges don't like to grant mistrials. But if the judge is even considering that, that means the grounds of appeal are probably infinite at this point. All of the details have nothing to do with the facts and the law under which the indictment is being applied to Donald Trump. After 4 weeks, they need to get on with it, or they need to finally admit that this was nothing more than a witch hunt and a persecution, not a prosecution at all.
Speaking of the judge, Merchan, he said yesterday, quote, it appears that the $1,000 fines are not serving as a deterrent. He said that this court from this forward will have to consider a jail sanction. The magnitude of this decision is not lost on me, but at the end of the day, I have a job to do. So much as I don't want to impose a jail sanction, I want you to understand that I will, if necessary and appropriate. Now, Tim, we're both partisans where we see that this is a complete witch hunt in terms of what they're doing to Donald Trump with these trials and all these charges and everything. But take your partisan hat off and try to look at it as a clearly legal matter. Are some of the things that Donald Trump is tweeting and saying publicly after the trial, could they be prejudicial to the jury and hurt the trial?
No, because a defendant in our country has the ultimate right to zealously defend themselves however they want. And it's I believe this is another ground for appeal. You cannot silence a defendant in a criminal case. They have the right to speak. Now, everything they say can be used against him. That's the famous Miranda case that is decades in the making that we all learn in criminal procedure. A defendant has the right to silence, but they also have the right.
Can a defendant directly attack a witness?
Absolutely. As a defendant, absolutely. In a criminal case, you know why, Chris? Because every defendant...
Just because
I'm a former prosecutor and defense attorney, so I'm very passionate about these things. I know criminal law upside down and backwards and forwards. A defendant has the total constitutional right to zealously defend themselves however they see fit. Silencing a defendant in a criminal case is a ground for appeal.
Of course, up to the point of threatening...
Let me put it this way.
All right.
Anything that would be considered protected speech. We had a discussion yesterday about protected speech, right? So for instance, Donald Trump could not say he's going to kill the judge or the jury members or urging others to do so. Violent protests, as we discussed yesterday. When speech becomes action, right? So if Donald Trump were urging action that would be prosecutable in and of itself. But him just speaking that the judge sucks, the jury sucks, these people are horrible, they're liars, that's all protected speech. If Donald Trump were urging improper, inappropriate, illegal action on anyone, then he would be crossing the line. There is a line there. Mm-hmm. I don't think just because they don't like Donald Trump's criticism of them, that's not crossing the line. That would be the distinction I would make.
Stormy Daniels is currently being cross-examined, Tim, in court. She's been on the stand all day, of course. I'm wondering, and your legal expertise, do you think today will be it for her, or will she testify tomorrow for a series of days?
It depends on how many of the encounters this prosecution wants to go through. I would be looking at the jury, and at that clip you played, I think, was very telling. If the jury looks, and it's hard to read their minds, right? But if the jury is sitting there kind of giving you the death stare, you probably better just move on, because a prosecutor can beat the dead horse a little too much. At some point, people are going to go, okay, we get it. Donald Trump had an affair, maybe multiple ones, with this former porn star. We got it. Now, does she have anything to offer as to the actual charges in the indictment? or are we just going to hear about more nefarious encounters between Stormy Daniels and now Trump? There comes a point, Chris, where the defense can object because the evidence has become so ridiculously repetitive that we don't need to go over the same set of facts over and over again.
Now, remember, the judge, it's reported, was admonishing the defense because they didn't object more to the line of questioning or what Stormy Daniels is was saying. Does that an admission in a sense that that he is not doing his job correctly? Or you know, I've heard instances where judges have interjected and stopped themselves and objected, not even one of the attorneys doing it. Is that rare?
It is. The judges try not to interfere with the testimony. The judges are not there to make the jury convinced of anything one way or the other. They're sporting event. They're supposed to be the referees. They're supposed to stay out of the way of the football, out of the way of the puck. They're supposed to stay out of the way of the players. But if someone commits a foul, if someone commits a penalty, that's when the judges step in. So think of it that way. Anytime Judge Merchum is stepping into the playing field, the pitch, the arena, that means that someone has done something that he's flagging, or that someone is flagging for him, and that's why he's responding. That's the only time a judge is supposed to interfere in a case itself.
Well, we're going to be speaking much more about this trial in the weeks to come. I heard yesterday that the defense or the prosecution probably has another 2 weeks worth of witnesses. Of course, the defense will have their own witnesses and will call their witnesses. So I could see this trial maybe happening another month or so, Tim. So we'll have a lot to talk about that. Coming up, David Stokes, Director of Municipal Policy of the Shelby Institute, will talk to him about a judge okaying extra pot taxes and this controversial decision to redo police and court buildings in University City. You're listening to the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show on 101.9 94.1 News Talk STL.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
It's been almost 1 year since former Circuit Attorney Kim Gardner stepped down from office after an ongoing legal battle with Attorney General Andrew Bailey. But an audit looking to reveal how she ran the Circuit Attorney's office dates back even farther after the city's Board of Aldermen requested it in 2018. Monday, State Auditor Scott Fitzpatrick urged Gardner to cooperate with the audit, a process he says she's delayed the last 2 years. The only problem? His office has no idea where she is.
You may have resigned, but your resignation does not end your responsibility to answer to the people of St. Louis about your time in office.
4:28 on the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show. And Tim, very, very bizarre story. And let's see what our next guest has to think about that and other stories we're going to be mentioned.
David Stokes over at the Shelby Institute.
In high school, you talk about this, I had a very short spike.
It was spike somewhere in that stuff.
It wasn't very punky. It was more Leave It to Beaver-ish, maybe.
David, welcome to the show. The reason that I started off with that clip was because in a previous life, you owned a process serving business. And so I wanted to ask you, in your experience, what does it tell you when you're having difficulty trying to serve someone legal papers?
Well, if they've left the state, and the Post-Dispatch article said that that's one suspicion, then it gets really tricky to find people from that perspective, and to certainly serve them papers. If the auditor's office, it sounds like they're trying to do that, but if they've left the state and don't want to be served, it can be a lot harder than you think to serve people in those cases, and in particularly one where in this instance, it's not like this. It's going to follow her forever. If she can avoid being served for another year or so, this thing will probably go away, or they'll just finish it without her. It's really terrible that she's so just completely turned her back on her own responsibilities. She might not have a legal requirement to assist with this audit anymore, but I think she certainly has a ethical one. But based on her time as the circuit attorney, we know that those things don't rank real highly for her.
Yeah, David, how bizarre is this? I mean, she can't be found. I mean, there was a time not too long ago where Kim Gardner was, if there was a microphone or a podium around you, she wasn't too far from it when she was pursuing former Governor Eric Greitens and all the aftermath of all the investigations then of her office that were pursued. And now she's disappeared. I mean, you know, talk about a public servant who was never cut out for the job. But voters need to really pay attention to people and stop electing activists, don't they? They need to start electing people who actually want to actually serve the public.
And it's recollection is it's the most amazing thing was not that she got elected in the first place. I mean, strange things happen. The most amazing thing was that she got reelected. Like, when she was reelected, even though everybody knew what a terrible job she'd done. That was the real indictment of the voters in the city of St. Louis, to pun intended, I guess.
Tim, ask another question. I got a little discombobulated. I left my ATM machine in the car, and the girls were bringing it to me. So go ahead.
Better take care of that for you. Yeah. So, you know, David, in other news today, we saw that the Post-Dispatch was reporting, we've been speaking about a lot of legal matters here. A judge has okayed an extra pot tax ruling in favor of St. Louis and St. Charles County. David, I remember we talked about this with you, but it's been a long time. Would you remind our listeners what was the subject matter of this litigation and what has been the development?
Absolutely, and it's very interesting, and yeah, we've talked about it several times here. So when voters approved legal marijuana in Missouri, I presume right around 2 years ago, I guess, maybe a little bit longer, the part of the fine print in the bill said that the local government tax, which was set at 3% if voters approved it, it could be either a city tax or a county tax, but it could not be both, meaning that if a county approved it, it would be collected within the unincorporated parts of that county, and if a city approved it, it would be within the city. But county taxes would not apply in incorporated parts of various counties. That's what the backers of the plan tried to do with the Constitution and with their sort of fine print writing. That's not how taxes are done. Sales taxes are done in Missouri. County taxes are countywide, and city sales taxes are obviously collected in that city. So this would have been a unique instance, which theoretically would have been possible, I guess, being that they were amending the Constitution. But a few counties sued, St. Louis and St. Charles. I'm sure every county was in support of it, and said, no, that's wrong. And they argued, as it turns out correctly, because the judge just ruled in their favor, that it had to be the way that it's always been done in Missouri. And there are certainly, I'm sure, other constitutional rules on this, that when counties levy taxes, they levy it countywide, property or sales taxes or whatever, and that counties don't levy taxes that only apply in the unincorporated parts of a county. So that's just it. So what's happened is now if you're a pot enthusiast, if you buy from stores located within municipalities, your taxes are going to go up 3%, because now you're going to be paying a 3% county local. Now, of course, it'll be appealed, and who knows how it will turn out, but I think that the counties always had the stronger argument, and obviously the first judges agreed with them. So if you're buying a marijuana at a pot store in, say, Ladue, I have no idea if Ladue has any marijuana dispensaries, but let's say they do, then you'll pay the 3% Ladue tax and the 3% St. Louis County tax. But here's where it gets interesting for people who are in the business and have built dispensaries. It certainly is going to prove advantageous to people who've built dispensaries in unincorporated parts of a county, where you will always have a price advantage now over your competitors within cities, because you'll always just have that 3% limit. And it will never go up to 6%. The same thing, I'm pretty sure, will apply to the city of St. Louis, since that's obviously famously not within a county. You know, marijuana dispensaries located in the city, such as the one at the former Tom's Bar and Grill in the Central West End, that I went to all the time when it was Tom's Bar and Grill, but haven't been to since, they'll be capped at 3%. And I'm not a buyer, but you know, if you're buying a fairly large amount of legal marijuana at some point, you know, that 3% price difference can really add up. So this might give sort of a permanent advantage in our region to the dispensaries in the unincorporated parts of the counties and in the city of St. Louis. And it's going to be, you know, interesting to see how that plays out. Will future dispensaries really go out of their way to locate in unincorporated areas to keep that price low and that tax low?
David, I heard you in your answer there say pot enthusiast instead of pothead. Is that the new designation? Your pot enthusiast instead of a pothead.
Pothead has a negative component to it.
Okay.
And, you know, it is a legal product, and I've always supported it being a legal product. So, yeah, I think you can. People can certainly use it responsibly.
Is a drunk, a alcohol enthusiast?
Yeah, right. I mean, people use alcohol responsibly, so I'll go with marijuana enthusiast, marijuana enjoyer. Yeah, I don't want to call everybody a pothead.
I just want to clear that up. Here's my question. This is close to home for both of us, David. Talk about this plan by University City to redo the police and court buildings, and it only costs a cool $27 million.
Well, there's two parts to this. There's the second part is sort of similar to the discussion we just had about the marijuana tax, because it's going to be probably, I wouldn't be surprised if it went to a lawsuit. So University City is looking to redo their police department and municipal court. And I think that's a great idea. I'm not necessarily opposed I certainly support redoing the police station. They've been using trailers for the past several years, and they've got to improve that. And obviously, as I think your listeners know, you and I, Chris, both live in mm-hmm. University City. So I support redoing the police station. I don't know for sure if the $27 million plan is a good one or a bad one. You know, they're talking changes to St. Louis County buildings and talking, you know, $500 and $600 million. So, you know, $27 million off the top of my head sounds, you know, within reason for a new municipal court and police building. But the debate is, they want to use these city-owned buildings right behind City Hall there, just north of Del Mar, on the west end of the famous U-City Loop. And they're talking about just issuing bonds to use these buildings with a lease, but voters in U-City approved an ordinance about 7-8 years ago requiring any sale or lease of any city-owned buildings to go to a vote of the people of University City, and that was done primarily about parkland. There was a spate of votes around the area 5, 6, 7, 10 years ago where activists were getting signatures and requiring cities to go to a vote for the sale of any parkland. And I don't necessarily want to see cities selling parkland. I didn't think that was a good idea then, and I don't think it is now. But that said, it is the law in University City, and the city has sort of indicated that even though they're going to do this leaseback provision to fund the bonds here, they're not going to put it to a vote of the people, even though I think a pretty plain reading of the law says that they have to. So this is going to be very interesting. The city manager has said since they're primarily going to be using this complex lease agreement system where they're leasing equipment and facilities, but not the property itself, and that mm-hmm. that gets them around the legal requirement for a public vote. And I think that that's exactly the type of legal minutia that drives people crazy, because the plain language of the law that everybody understands is that if you sell or lease city equipment or city land or city buildings, and University City's rule says leasing and says buildings, then you should go to a vote of the people. So if University City tries to get around that, I think that would upset a lot of people like me who aren't automatically opposed to this whole plan. I could easily see myself supporting it. And if it goes to a vote of the people, I could see myself voting for it. But all that said, if they try to get around the plain law, I think that would be bad local government, absolutely. And as a fellow U-City resident, I'd love your thoughts on it.
Yeah, and David, would you explain, what's the funding mechanism again? Did you say it's all bonds, or was there a sales tax provision passed, or how are they funding this? And do they have the money and the funding for it?
Well, they're going to issue bonds. They're going to issue these. I'm trying to get the exact, you know, I think they're called star bonds here.
Okay, I've heard of star bonds. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's I think it's some star bonds here, where, yes, they then sort of lease the building to themselves, and they sort of pay the bonds off by paying a lease, by paying rent on a building to themselves that they already own. So that's sort of how this works. And, you know, they've been used before. And, again, I've got nothing automatically opposed to this plan. This plan sort of passes the smell test to me, and I could see myself supporting it, speaking more as a resident of the city than anything, but not seeing the city manager and city officials trying to get around the public vote was sort of an arcane and overly legalistic interpretation of the law. That drives me crazy when people do that. It's, you know, I wrote an op-ed in the St. Louis Business Journal about 2 years ago. I'm certain all of your listeners remember it well.
Mm-hmm. I've got it framed in my office.
Right, exactly. But the whole point of it was just the frustration when elected officials look at the plain meaning of the law and invent a new interpretation to get around it. And I cited the city earnings tax being imposed on remote workers, which is completely against the law. I cited county executive Page, moonlighting as a physician, even though the county charter says you have to be a full-time county executive. So just examples like that. And if University City were to do that here, I would think that would be really poor local government leadership.
David, you know, I had never heard of burning sage to rid things of bad luck until 1999 when the Rams won the Super Bowl. I remember there in the preseason they were burning sage and everything, and we ended up winning the Super Bowl. So it could be something that worked. What do you think would happen? I think that the loop trolley needs to burn sage so that thing can get some type of luck. We have a report in the paper that the loop trolley and an SUV have collided on Del Mar. An ambulance takes two to the hospital. I mean, can this thing get a break at all?
It can't get a break, and it doesn't deserve a break. I mean, some people deserve a break. This one doesn't. It's just, you know, the only good news that'll come from this is the loop trolley won't have to be operated for a couple of days. And we'll have an excuse that the federal government will have to buy. It's just so frustrating knowing that they tried to kill it, and because it was so poorly planned, the federal government, it took federal funds, the federal government said, as your listeners know, we've discussed it many times, you know, you can kill it if you want, but we want our $30 million back. Yeah. And it's not like the loop trolley can afford to pay the $30 back. So I don't blame Metro for the loop trolley. They sort of had it forced upon them after the fact. They're not the ones who instituted it and proposed it, and that was the Loop Trolley TDD, Transportation Development District. But I do blame Metro for not learning the lessons of this and trying to move forward with their absurd north-south route along Jefferson Avenue in the city, which is similarly going to serve very, very few people and cost 20 times as much as the Loop Trolley. So I don't blame Metro for the Loop Trolley. I do blame them for not learning the lessons here and for mostly just going out, as they often do, and spending money, trying to get money and spend it just for the sake of getting money and spending it.
And
they don't have it yet. They don't have the federal funding for it yet, and hopefully they never will.
And finally, David, as we wrap here, are there any articles on showmeinstitute.org that you'd like to direct this to, or any upcoming special guests?
Absolutely. We've got a webinar tomorrow that we're putting on. It's put on by Ed Choice, the Reason Foundation, and some other groups about introducing their new school choice calculator that talks about the fiscal impacts of various school choice programs around the country and in Missouri. So you can go to the webinars tomorrow, 11 a.m. Central Time. And if you go to showmeinstitute.org to our events page, you can register to attend right now. And I hope some of your listeners can jump on and join us for it tomorrow.
David, thank you so much. As always, we look forward to speaking with you next Tuesday. You are the Director of Municipal Policy at the Show Me Institute. Thank you so much, sir, and have a great evening.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Tim.
Excellent. Tim, we're going to talk about the polls that we missed yesterday. I got on my Kristen Welker rant yesterday and did not do Chris's Corner, so I'm going to do that today. It's 4:44, 4:47. We'll have Chris's Corner. You're listening to the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show on 101.9/94.1 News Talk STL, number one for live and local conservative talk.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
If President Trump is in chains going to Rikers Island, then, like, would you want to buy a U.S. Treasury the next day? The thing that I'm really worried about short-term risks for the economy, is that the Democrats are serious in this lawfare. And if they actually succeed, then imagine, it's like we become a banana republic the moment they take them to Rikers. And I just can't imagine what happens to Treasury markets that day.
4:50 on the Tim Jones and Chris Arv show. Tim, Chris's Corner is going to be postponed again. We've got breaking news. You heard that clip there where the gentleman was talking about Trump going to jail. Well, one trial that Trump is not going to have to worry about going to jail is the Florida documents case. A judge, according to National Review, Tim, I've got that note as well, says that the judge has indefinitely postponed Trump's classified documents trial. Quote, former President Donald Trump's criminal trial in Florida for allegedly mishandling classified documents is being postponed indefinitely. Trump appointed Judge Eileen Cannon ordered a new pretrial schedule for motions and discovery Tuesday afternoon after the classified documents case was originally scheduled to go to trial later this month. Quote, the court also determines that the finalization of a trial date at this juncture before resolution of the myriad and interconnected pretrial and CIPA issues remaining and forthcoming would be imprudent and inconsistent with the court's duty to fully and fairly consider the various pending pretrial motions before the court, critical CPI issues, and additional pretrial and trial preparations necessary to present this case to a jury, Cannon said in the order. Okay, Tim, break all that down for simplified. What's going on here?
Well, I'll tell you what's going on here. Jack Smith is up a creek without a paddle. And this was telegraphed on Dan Bongino's show this afternoon on our station. Folks, you should listen to Bongino every single afternoon because he was at the tip of the spear on this. This comes, Chris, after Judge Cannon's decision. Judge Cannon's decision today in postponing this trial indefinitely follows an admission last week by special counsel Jack Smith's prosecutors that, get this, folks, listen to this. Evidence was rearranged after the FBI raided Mar-a-Lago in August of 2022. The government had previously told the judge the box remained intact. So now you have the lead investigators and the prosecutors on this Get Trump case admitting that they may have manipulated evidence at best, and they may have planted evidence at worst. Chris, so much for the Get Trump TDS syndrome raging across the country. The Alvin Bragg case is completely falling apart. When was the last time you heard anything about Fannie Willis's prosecution in Georgia? I asked my friends in Georgia about that. They said that case is on the way back burner. It looks like the Alvin Bragg case is going to implode, and none of these other cases are going to get to trial before the November election. This is what happens when you have a bunch of Trump derangement syndrome prosecutors who are persecuting a political opponent.
And, you know, they think we're all wearing tinfoil hats when Donald Trump talks about the government is spying on him and his campaign. We find out that they actually were bugging him or spying at him at Mar-a-Lago. And then he said during this whole seizure of documents at Mar-a-Lago that some of the evidence may have been planted or manipulated, and everybody was saying this was just pretrial spin, Donald Trump, this is all BS. Mm-hmm. And then we find out many, many months later that exactly what he said happened. Folks, look, I'm not a conspiracy theory person. I really am not. But when you see the things that have happened to Donald Trump, starting with Donald Strzok and them conspiring to keep him from being president and having a secret plan, to what we see here of evidence being rearranged in a serious case dealing with national security documents, I mean, do you need any more evidence that there is actually a deep state, Tim?
I don't think you do, Chris. And look, here's the problem. They bet the farm on this stuff, right? I mean, folks, I want you to do something that I would never advise you to do. I want you to watch MSNBC or CNN tonight and watch the big sad faces and the crocodile tears. Chris, they're going to be beside themselves. All those so-called legal experts on MSDNC and the Clinton News Network, the Commie News Network at CNN, they're going to be losing their minds. Yeah. Chris, here's the deal. I don't think the Georgia case can possibly be brought to trial before November. The Jack Smith case, which many people felt had some serious potential implications for the president, has just been announced that it's not going to go to trial before November the 4th. So all of this is going to wither on the vine. And doesn't it all look now like it was totally and utterly concocted because the prosecutors have no clothes in these cases?
And if you remember, the documents case was supposed to be the most clear-cut case that the president faced serious jail time and the possibility of found guilty. That case is now indefinitely postponed. You know what the spin is going to be tonight in the mainstream media, that Judge Cannon, Eileen Cannon, is a Donald Trump appointee and that she's doing everything in her power to shield the man that appointed her to the bench to try to help out his cause. That will be the charge, of course. But, Tim, how would you counter that if you were a spokesman for her and you were on a liberal media show? How would you counter that?
I was getting a text from Joey.
How would you counter what the left is going to say, that Judge Eileen is just a Trump appointed a judge who is being a crony and just helping out the man that appointed her to the bench?
Well, I would point out that how about the judge in the hush money case, that wacko Judge Ergeron in New York? Look, all these judges are appointed by somebody, right? So if we're going to get into that battle, we can argue that Alvin Bragg and Judge Mershon are in the pocket of the left, right? I mean, judges take an oath, Chris. They take a very serious oath, and they're supposed to look at the evidence objectively, and they're supposed to render fair and judicial decisions with every single motion, every single objection, and every single ruling. So they'll argue that, and of course they will. They'll hang their hats on that, but that's what they do all the time, right? Remember what they said about Amy Coney Barrett when they said she was going to be the handmaid's tale. And then last week, I think it was you maybe that was reporting that, well, maybe they're not so sure about that anymore. So, you know, if the decision is correct, then it's correct. It doesn't matter if it's left or right.
Tim, I'm not an attorney, but I would say today was a very good legal day for Donald Trump.
Donald Trump had a fantastic day indeed in the courthouse.
Speaker Stump's speech coming up at 5:07. Dr. Randy Tobler at 5:24. You're listening to the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show on 101.9/94.1 News Talk STL.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.